Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us a recipe or email us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are all archived on our website at recipeforpeacenow.com. You can also connect with us through the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Pardon me. I already cleared my throat. Thank you. Let's get started. Yes. This time we're going to be talking about persistence. And as we often do on this show, because we are practical people, we actually are going to define what we mean when we say persistence within our context, within the context of a workshop, a seminar, a negotiated dispute, an alternative dispute resolution, whatever it is that we're doing. So, what do we mean when we say persistence within our context? And I see there's lots of folk here. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. Let's see. Oh, we have lots of good definitions. You know, Bobby has the most popular definition, and quite a few people are saying this one, that persistence within our context is not giving up. Yeah, not giving up. We're not going to quit. We're going to find a way to reach our successful outcome. So persistence in our context is not giving up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Zoe and others are adding to not giving up and saying that being persistent within our context is being patient and understanding of participant needs so that no one gives up. Ooh. See, we won't give up, of course, but we're the leader, and we need our participants not to give up, right? And you know, once someone kind of quits on you, then other people get discouraged. It gets kind of contagious, right? And so you want everyone to feel the same sense of persistence, the same sense that we are not going to give up, that we are going to reach our successful outcome. We're going to get consensus, we're going to do it together. Mm-hmm. So it's very important, being patient and understanding of participant needs so that no one gives up. Yeah, no one gives up. And yes, quite a few of you, thank you all for being here. We have quite a few people who have been here before also, and welcome to everyone. A lot of people, when we say patience and understanding, are quoting the civility rules. And the Recipe for Peace Now really doesn't have really big rules or anything. We say whatever works because we're practical. But one of the things that we always have underlying is our civility rules. And that really means, very simply at its base, that no one will be rude to anyone else or make anyone else feel uncomfortable so that people don't give up because they just can't get along with the other participants. And that could happen. People could lose their enthusiasm, could feel uncomfortable. And of course, as leader, we enforce the civility rules of being civil to each other and creating a convivial atmosphere so that people feel persistent. People, the participants, feel like we can handle this. We're going to keep going. We're going to find a way. Mm-hmm. Because we're a good, tight group, a good team, a good group dynamic. And, you know, sometimes if you do like an international corporation, something biggish, or a workshop or a seminar, you probably have all seen this, there are surveys taken at the end. The participants are asked how they liked it, how they felt about it, and like that after they finish doing it, mostly with workshops and things. Most comments that I get are about the use of the civility rules, about how everyone felt included, about how everyone felt that they were really a part of it, that they were really, that if we were just persistent enough, if we just hung in there, we would figure it out together as a team, as a group, that the group dynamic was very well, and they felt good about it. A lot of times people say they felt honored to participate. Wow, that's great. Honored to participate, right? Which means that they really, when they got done, they felt that they'd done something, that the time had not been wasted. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the key to it, to be patient and understanding of participant needs so that no one gives up. And we all strive forward together. We all, you know, in a workshop, a seminar, the goal is to really learn something and to get a life skill, right? It's not so much an outside outcome. It's a personal journey outcome. And people really feel like they've got it, that they've learned something that they can take with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that takes persistence, because we're all adults and, you know, it's hard to change. Hard to get a new way of thinking, which is what Recipe for Peace Now promotes, right? What we all promote, a new way of thinking towards mediation and not towards altercation. Yeah. Yeah. It's a new way of thinking for a lot of people. Like, really? Is that going to work? Mm-hmm. It is. We're going to be persistent. Mm-hmm. Ryan and others are making a good point that persistence within our context, within the context of being honored to be in the group and of not giving up and of going forward, that persistence is understanding that difficulties are temporary and to be worked through. Oh, yes. Because oftentimes life happens, right? We reach a stumbling block. Something happens, might not even be a participant or anything else, might not be an internal thing, might be an outside thing. But something happens and we go, uh-oh, that's a problem. If we don't have persistence, we're going to let it kill us. We're going to give up. No. We need persistence within our context is understanding that difficulties are temporary and to be worked through. I might add to be worked through as a group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whatever it is, we can handle it. It's just a temporary setback or a temporary block in the road. No, we're gonna find a way because we have persistence and a great team dynamic. Mm-hmm. We're going to work together and find a way to resolve the issue so that we can go forward. Yeah. So now that we've decided what persistence is within our context, let's talk about the type of situations that require persistence. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What requires us to really break out our persistence speech to our participants and really make us kind of dig in? So that we don't give up and that we can be patient and understanding of participant needs so that no one gives up. Very important. You can't lead a group if the group is dissolving. Mm-hmm. And that we understand that difficulties are temporary and to be worked through. Mm-hmm. So what type of situations require this kind of persistence? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, Sharon and others, and thank you all for all of your participation, are talking about that we need persistence when it's dragging, when the process is taking longer than expected, as she says. Yeah. You know, we don't like things to resolve quickly and successfully and in our favor, right? But sometimes the process is the process. It takes a while. It depends on other people, usually, and their reaction and their actions. Yeah, this takes a while. It's not something that just occurs. We have to really think about it. We have to work it through, yeah. And it's complicated. So the process has taken longer than expected. When we got sometimes, you know, and we've talked about the steps and how the process can take a while. And also prior shows, yes, they're archived on our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. And yes, I know you guys say that I hit the now really hard in Recipe for Peace Now. It's because if you forget the now, you will hit a vegan website and think I'm insane. You'll go, where is the radio show? Where's her picture? It's recipeforpeacenow.com. People forget the now. Yes, yes, I know it's long. Mm-hmm, yeah. Y'all can handle it. The process is taking longer than expected. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you start something, and it seems obvious. And you decide what success looks like, but then it expands. Mm-hmm. Or you've got kind of a general success looks like, and you need to modify it down into steps because you need to be able to handle it. You know, we're a realistic show. Pardon me. We're real practical. And the thing is that you need to be able to get to your successful outcome in the real world. We don't do theory here. So sometimes the process takes a while. You know, I've used this example before, but people are mentioning it. And thank you for having listened. I happen to be a Rotarian. We all know what a Rotarian is. Rotary is an international organization with clubs in everybody's country. Yeah, most of you either are Rotarians, hello, or you know exactly what it is. We do good around the world. The motto is service above self. So we go and we do good things for people that can do us no reciprocal act. It's just that the world needs help, and Rotarians take it on as a project, which is, you know, that's something, right? Because we talk about reasons for being in a group. Well, yeah. You know what? People ask me that. Because Rotarians, and this is a good point, oftentimes you get a group dynamic, and we're diverting a minute here from persistence, but, you know, this show is unscripted, and it takes us wherever it takes us. And people have asked about Rotary and other things, and oftentimes we think about a group dynamic as everyone being the same, being in the room for the same reason. But that's really not true. A lot of times you get many diverse types of people working towards a successful outcome, working towards the process, which is now taking longer than expected, and we need persistence, working towards reaching across and out to other people who need to help us, right? Because that has to do with persistence, too, because they probably don't want to. Because, it's time-consuming. They might be a politician and they're worried about their constituents. It might take money. You know what I mean? There's a variety of reasons why someone would need to be persistently pursued in order to join forces and help. Usually that has to do with governments and organizations. They're slow to act and they like the status quo. Because they're the ones in power, right? If they didn't like the status quo, they wouldn't be in power. So a lot of times when you're dealing with organizations, especially governments, and I include my own, and I happen to be in the United States, it's not a type of government, it's every kind of government. They don't like to move very fast or very far. And so you need persistence. And you need to get a diverse group of people to reach consensus as to what needs to be done, and then, oh my God, do it. Mm-hmm. And for example, with Rotary, we do service projects all over the world. Now, why are people Rotarians? Why do you join such a group? Well, for a variety of reasons. But none of them really having to do with the project at hand. Say it is clean water in an area that doesn't have clean water. We want to dig wells or to have a water purification project. Yes, I know, I usually use polio as the example, but that's a worldwide thing. Let's use something smaller. a lot of people in the world, a lot of you may come from areas, because this is an international show, I know a lot of you are not Americans, and welcome to everybody, come from countries or areas where clean water is not a given. And Rotary goes and does water purification projects in a variety of ways. We won't even talk about it. But you need to get the Rotarian group together because we're the impetus. Why are Rotarians in the room? It's not their clean water. I mean, really, it's not. Mostly Rotarians are from places where they've got clean water and infrastructure and like that. But they see a need in the world. They're there because of altruism, because it's a good thing, and they're giving back to the world. See, that's social good. They are not there because they're being paid, because it costs them money. Rotary does not send you to the area. You take it out of your own pocket, the airfare, the lodging, the whole bit. You take it out of your own pocket. So there's an altruistic, a societal reason. But let's face it, there is also a networking. You want to go with that group of people, because a whole bunch of Rotarians usually go, because it's a bonding experience. It's kind of fun. And you get something done besides. And also, usually, while you're in whatever country it is, you get to take a side trip, and you get to see nice things that you've never seen before. Yeah, it's interesting. It's good for your soul, and you meet other interesting people, right? Right. So those are all good things and reasons to want to be in the group. But other people need to be in the group too. You need to contact the people you're intending to help, because they have to understand that you're coming. They have to make provision for you. You have to find some sort of lodging and like that. They have to understand what you're doing and that they want it. Because after all, this is not, they might not realize that they need such a thing. They have to understand that you're there to help. Sometimes there's suspicion. So you have to deal with the local people. And then you have to deal with the government of whatever country it is that you're going into. On a bigger level, because they might have to put in some effort, maybe some economics, some infrastructure. They must be welcoming, because sometimes you're dealing with governments that are, they don't like outsiders that much. And they're kind of suspicious themselves, right? And they don't want to lose their power base in some way. And like that, so there's lots of people in the room. You've got the people on the ground in the country that are supplying supplies. Transportation, housing, that's economic, right? You have the end recipients who would like it very much and have to understand that they would like it very much. You have their leaders who have to understand that you're not trying to topple them or anything, because after all, leaders worry. And you have oftentimes other kinds of organizations or governmental things that need to be, we're going to call them what Ryan says, understanding that difficulties are temporary and to be worked through. Because you'd think everybody would be pleased that fresh water is coming, but not always so much, surprisingly enough. So the process could take a long time and have a lot of people. You need to be persistent and not say, oh, for heaven's sakes, this is taking really a long time. We're just going to move on. Go give clean water to someone else. No, they need it. These people need it too. It's just that it's going to take a little. Yeah. So that's the kind of a situation where persistence is necessary. Yes, it's a good point, and it's organizational skills too. Somebody has to keep track. Somebody has to working on it, right? Yeah. Keep making the phone calls, sending the emails, pretending that someone hasn't been rude. That's a good one. Yes. Thomas says that what kind of situations require persistence is that you need to do with outside opposition. Yeah, that's the government. That's the tribal leader sometimes, right? Outside opposition. You need persistence to make them not be opposition. Now, that's not saying that they now have to agree with you. They might, and that would be excellent, right? But to have persistence when dealing with outside opposition and overcome it may just mean that they won't actively oppose you. See, that'll be sufficient. They don't really agree. They can't see the point. They don't care. But they're not going to stand in your way anymore because you've been really persistent. And it's not, they don't care enough to really pursue their opposition if you're going to be insistent about coming, for example. Right? Yeah. You don't have, I always say you don't have to be friends, you just have to be willing participants. And sometimes willingness is just not being unwilling. Does that make sense? Yeah. Not being actively oppositional. Just ignore the whole thing. Let us come and do our good deed. And, well, that's nice. I'm not going to help, but I won't send troops either. Yeah. Yeah. Mikako and others are saying that one of the type of situations that require persistence is the need to deal with internal disagreements. Yeah. And Joan says you need to create consensus and define your goal, right? Yeah. Need to deal with internal disagreements. Need to be persistent. Because we think about persistence as being us dealing with them, right? That somebody is not exactly on our side, and we need to be persistent to pursue our goal and to get them to, well, hopefully agree, but at the least back down, right? But Mikako and others are making a good point that you need to deal with internal disagreements. And that's part of being persistent and part of a situation that often happens. Sometimes, because we are diverse, the group participants are having some difficulty agreeing on the next step, on agreeing on what success looks like. Because we've come for different reasons, right? Yeah. It's like the clean water, and oftentimes I use marijuana as a example of this, right? That you need sometimes the people in the room need to define and be persistent together about what their goal is. That's everyone's goal. And what step needs to be taken next. And it's not always obvious. For example, when in the United States, the federal government says that marijuana is illegal, right? The states, groups got together and put whether or not marijuana should be legal in the states. Very big deal. Very forward thinking because it's still federally illegal. But states are starting to get on board. But the groups had to get together. And they had to understand that internal disagreements were going to need some persistence and needed to be worked through. You couldn't just quit and form your own group because you needed everyone. Who's in the room? Well, you've got social good, people who believe that it would be a good thing to have legal marijuana and not have people get arrested for buying an herb, essentially speaking. And then you have people with an economic interest, right? Growers, sellers, wholesalers, I mean, all kinds of people who wanted to have an economic interest. They wanted to make some money. And then you had the end users who originally started out. Now it's getting a little deeper than this, but the original push was done by people who needed medical marijuana. It would alleviate some of their symptoms, mostly pain and nervous system problems, right? And those people were diverse too, because they were different kinds of ailments. And each one of those ailments and each one of those groups had kind of organizations already set up, right? And HIV, glaucoma, all kinds of nervous system disorders, they already had organizations too. So everybody had to understand and be persistent in their pursuit of putting the initiative on the ballot, mm-hmm, and wording it properly and knowing what it would look like if it was legal. Yeah. So the process took longer, and you needed to deal with outside opposition, right? There were people who were against the idea, and they were organized too. And you need to deal with internal disagreements, mm-hmm, and you have to be persistent on all of them. Because if we just give up, it's not going to work very well, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good point. Dalma and others are making that you need to really need to define the definite outcome so that we all know what we're working towards. Sometimes that's the problem. We're not quite certain exactly what success looks like. Mm-hmm. And we need to know that. Because, quite frankly, we need to know when we've got it. We need to know when we've been successful. We need to know that we have reached our defined outcome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What other situations require persistence? You know, this is a lot of people are saying, with Sean and others, that sometimes you get participant burnout, and you need to rekindle the enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. I suppose burnout is an Americanism, and we are, of course, a global show. It means that you've lost your enthusiasm. You're tired. The process is kind of dragging. And life has happened, and you've kind of got other things to do. And it's just, you're feeling kind of tired all around. And people are starting to lose their enthusiasm, starting to lose their persistence. They've made the 400 phone calls, and now they need to make them again. Ah, gee. You know, it's kind of like, well, we're not getting good reception. We're not getting a good outcome. And the answer is, well, you know, you need to keep working at it. Keep trying, right? Yeah. Because persistence, you ever hear the word, the expression, it's probably an Americanism, but a lot of people are using it, persistence pays off. It's an expression, persistence pays off. It means that if you keep trying, you keep whittling away, you keep, well, all right, people using the word nagging, but in a nice way, right? Because persistence is more than just being a pain. It's being a pain to get somewhere. It's going to work. It's just that because people will get sick of hearing from you and finally go, oh, all right. Yeah, but sometimes you get burnout because it's taken a while. They've already made the rounds, and now they got to do it again. And it was a pain the first time, which it is, especially if there's some opposition. But you got to keep going because we're not going to give up. So how do we, now that we've decided that we might have some burnout, and quite frankly, we get leadership burnout too, right? But let's talk about participant burnout first. Yeah. How do we rekindle that enthusiasm? How do we get people to not get discouraged, essentially speaking? Burnout is being discouraged and saying, you know, this really isn't working. We've been trying for a really long time, real diligently. We've had a lot of persistence. And, geez, it doesn't seem like it's working. Mm-hmm. Well, secretly, it is working. It's just that sometimes you don't see the results so fast because you're working towards the result. So how do we rekindle the enthusiasm to go forward and be persistent and not give up. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are saying that you need to modify the goal and to break it down into steps. We're very big on that, to break it down into steps so that we can, A, get a handle on it, so that we know what the next goal is towards the big goal, yeah? And really can see it, really can work towards it, right? Yeah. And so you modify down, you maybe modify the goal, but really break it into steps is what we're doing. And then we can do what Misha and others are talking about. We can celebrate how far we've come. It's very important to celebrate that and to really memorialize that we are going forward. It may not be fast. Yeah, it's true. It may not be pretty. I mean, it may be kind of, needs a lot of persistence. It needs a lot of diligence. It's kind of like, oh my, yeah. But we're people, and after a while, even if we've divided into steps and we've modified some, it's hard to remember how low down we were when we started, right? And how far we've come. Because that's what leads to the discouragement. It seems like, man, we are not getting anywhere. So you divide the process into steps, and as Misha says, you celebrate how far we've come. Yeah, every time we get somebody over to our side or make a little bit of progress, let's celebrate it. Let's remark on it. Let's remark on the positive because we'll need to discuss the negative. You know how sometimes all the discussion seems to be around how it's not working? Mm-hmm. What we should do next because this didn't work, right? Sometimes things are like that. Sometimes groups have that. And it gets kind of negative, right? Well, we need to discuss the positive too, right? What happened that was good? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Han Suki and others are talking about in order to create enthusiasm so that we can be persistent. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's good to make new alliances. I think that's a real good point. A lot of times when you get into something, especially if it has to deal with a lot of government and like that, and it might be more of a social good, right? Something that needs to be changed. Or even like my clean water example. In order to maintain enthusiasm, in order to maintain your group, and in order to prevent participant burnout, you have to keep going forward, and that means making new alliances. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times the alliance, the people that you're getting in that are new, are more on the ground, are more attuned to what's happening wherever you're trying to go, like the clean water. The Rotarians who get the idea and get the idea for the project, there's a whole process. Organizations or groups in the country that would like to have us come with the clean water, make a proposal to Rotary, right? Rotary is big, it is international, and there's a grant asking process. We don't just show up someplace unannounced. Somebody has to ask for it, right? And the people who make the decision that this grant is going to be accepted and that we're going to come into the area to help, those people in the initial process, because I see it all the time, I deal with Rotarians a lot, those people in the initial process are usually start out oftentimes as Americans at least on my end of the thing, because I see mostly Americans, or people who are not in the country in need. Usually the people asking for the grant, however, are in the country in need, and frequently there are Rotary groups there. They are Rotarians in clubs, is what we call it, within the country asking for the help. Because they see what needs to be done. And they look around and they go, you know, we're part of an international organization, and there are people in our country, in our area, that don't have access to clean water, for example, because there's no infrastructure that reaches them. Let's ask our international overseeing organization, which is called Rotary International, for help. But the people asking for the help and the people looking at the grant and deciding on the help and the people coming from the United States to help give the help, none of them need the clean water. Makes really no personal difference to them. They're not in areas where they don't have tap water. Clean water comes out of their tap. It's fantabulous. Yeah. But what they're doing is that they're making new alliances to do good things. And those alliances are not little stagnant things. They are networking. It's an overused word, but it's true. And, you know, Recipe for Peace Now advocates lots of networking, because you get to meet each other. You get to connect with other Rotarians, other business people. Yes, this is true. There is kind of an underlying, there's always an underlying personal benefit with humans, oftentimes, right? Yeah, I'd like to know somebody in your country. I'd like to know you. I'd like to visit. I'd like to maybe do business with you. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because mostly the business people, Rotary's not a cheap thing to join, right? And so it is kinds of reasons to make new alliances. Mm-hmm. And the new alliances will keep you persistent, because we want to keep in touch and because we don't want to fail if we've met these new people. New members. Corey says new members. Yeah, new blood is the idea of the thing. Yes, and a lot of times our group on this end gets new interested people for a variety of reasons. But if they see that we're being persistent and we're getting somewhere and we're really going to make the trip and we're really going to have the devices to make the clean water or to help dig a well or whatever it is that needs to be done, yeah? If we're going to do all these things and other people see that it's going to be successful, we're going to go for our goal, you'll get newcomers as you go along. They go, oh, that's a good idea. I have connections. Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful word. I have connections. I know somebody in that area. Let me call them. Let me see what they think. Let us try to ease the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a very good point, too. Michael and others are saying that sometimes if you've got something that's really difficult and it's not working, you're being real persistent, but it doesn't seem to be working out so well. But the group is real persistent and going to good, not only can you modify your goal so that it becomes more realistic at this point in time under the circumstances, but sometimes you need to, as Michael says, go on to a different task and come back to the problem with fresh eyes. We're not giving up. We're being persistent. But within our process, within what we want, there's different angles, different areas. And as Michael says, we could go on to a different task and come back to the problem with fresh eyes. Approach it from a different direction, right? that's what happened with the marijuana initiative that I talked about. Mm-hmm. For years, all of these groups and the alliances shifted, and people were persistent, and people came and people went. You know how that is. Life happens, because it took years. For years, the push, the idea was that you needed to change the federal law. This was practically a given. Federal law trumps all other law in the United States. You've got federal, which is the federal government in Washington, D.C., the president and the Congress and like that. And then you've got state, you know, we're divided into states. And then you've got more local things, more local kinds of laws, city and county and district and stuff like that. But federal law trumps state law, and state law trumps, you understand that the states were not really, had never really made laws that were against the federal law. So it seems sensible. What did you need to change? Well, you need to change the federal law and make marijuana legal. That's like a given, right? Mm-hmm. Lots of persistence, lots of alliances, lots of new members, old members, shifting membership. Mm-hmm. Lots of need, lots of, well, yeah, I suppose lots of greed too, but lots of economic interests, lots of campaigning, lots of, well, yeah, good point. Stuart and others are saying seeking expert advice. Yeah, lots of lobbying, lots of talking to people who were in favor, and lots of persistence of dealing with the people who were very well organized also against legalization. It's not a foregone conclusion. I mean, people have all kinds of arguments. They're basically the same arguments that have to do with alcohol, right? Yeah. And remember, the United States once had prohibition. It became so violent that the government had to do something about it, but we don't have that with marijuana. Oh, it didn't work. It didn't look like it was going to work. Lots of persistence, lots of experts, lots of alliances, lots of celebration of success, the whole bit, everything we talk about. Did something that Michael says. They kind of took a step back. Mm-hmm. Looked at it from a different angle and accepted something that you would think would not be good, but they had to modify their plans. And this is a real example of persistence, because they, after all that time, effort, money, effort, persistence, dealing with government officials, dealing with organizations, the whole nine yards, the whole ball, the whole thing, had to step back from the difficult task, right, and come back to the problem with fresh eyes. Example of persistence, they figured out, after all that, something really kind of discouraging, that it couldn't be done. It was hopeless. They were plain ordinary not going to get the federal government to legalize marijuana, to uncriminalize it. Not all drugs, just marijuana. But they just weren't going to get it to go. They had to accept that. Not going to work. Oh, my. Yeah. Well, that's discouraging. We're going to give up? Not going to work. All that effort, not going to work. Just can't. Finally came to the conclusion that it couldn't be done. Not from that angle. Not from that direction. This is an example of persistence. It couldn't be done. They thought about it. And they said, well, Here's something that's never in the world been done. Let's give it a try. Let's see if we can get the voters to legalize marijuana within their states. Still federally illegal. Remember federal law trumps state law? You could still get your marijuana shop and yourself arrested and your stuff confiscated by the federal government, even if you have a legal shop within a state. The states, you know, they're run by government officials, right? And we vote them in, so it's a democracy. So they are beholden to the voters, and the vote comes around pretty darn fast, like every 4 years, maybe even less, depending. And let's do something. Let's be persistent. It's never been done before. Just because it's never been done doesn't mean it can't be done, right? Let's go and put something federally illegal on the ballot of the states for voting, for the people to vote on. Yeah. You know, technically speaking, the law didn't say that was what was on the state ballot had to be federally sanctioned, but it was a loophole. Mm-hmm. But the voters, in order to get on a ballot, you have to get a whole bunch of signatures. Got a whole bunch of signatures. And on a state level, the politicians in some states that are fairly liberal and started it out didn't want to say no. So, persistence. Looked at it from a different angle. Came back to the problem with fresh eyes. Had worked really hard and long and wasn't working. Took a different idea. That's what happened. In some states, in the United States, marijuana is legal. You could just go into a shop. They're regulated. There's rules and stuff. But you can just go into a shop, especially medical marijuana. If you have a medical reason, you get a doctor to sign a medical card. And you can go and get marijuana to alleviate your symptoms. Fantabulous. Persistence, yes. So we've talked about participant burnout, and it's not good for persistence. How about leadership burnout? It happens to us too. We're people, right? And what happened? How should we deal with that? It's like, oh my God, it didn't work. I don't know about this state thing. I've been working at it a long time. But we need you to come and be persistent, you and your group and your dynamic and your expertise. Yeah, we're just taking a different turn, different path. So how do we prevent leadership burnout? Our own. Barbara says that you know when it's you've come too far to quit now. That's it. You get stubborn about it. You've come too far to quit now. Yeah, people are equating persistence with stubbornness. And that may be true. I always think of stubbornness as one step past where you will keep doing it even if it can't be done, like switching gears from federal to state, but you just insisted on federal even though it wasn't working, it wasn't making it. But you've come too far to quit now. Mm-hmm. You know, this is something that we always say. Gary and others are saying that the leader can't burn out because you need to set a good example of persistence. You do. You need to help turn the boat, to help find a different way, find a way to make this work. Set a good example of persistence. Mm-hmm. Catherine says you need to remember why you accepted the leadership role. Yeah. Why'd you say yes in the first place? You must have thought it was a good idea. Well, it's probably still a good idea. It's just taking a little longer, a little harder than you thought it might be. But you've come too far to quit now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Teru and others are saying in order to prevent leadership burnout, ask for help. I find that most people kind of lose their persistence as a leader. They're having difficulty delegating responsibility. You've got a group, It's not your responsibility to do everything for them and just have them come like the audience to what you've done. No, you need to set specific tasks with specific guidelines and time sensitivity, you know, by when you have to have this done, so that you're not doing it all yourself. And somebody needs to help organize it and keep track. That's usually not the leader. Mm-hmm. You're lucky if there is a paid person, but a lot of times somebody will take on that task. Somebody with a little bit of time, perhaps a retired person. They're oftentimes extremely good. And yes, I'm fond of interns. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially if you have some choice. You know, you kind of interview them. It's kind of hard when they're just given to you. Kind of like no vetting process, because they could be a bigger pain than they're worth. But, yeah. So ask for help. Mm-hmm. And that has to do with the delegation of duties. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Alvaro is making an interesting point that as a leader, you need to decide what is important and focus upon it. There's usually all kinds of little side issues skirting around there. And you need to focus on what's important so that we know what it is that we're being persistent about and when we've reached it and when it's time to celebrate and like that. Yeah. So we're going to delegate. We're going to decide what's important and focus and set a good example. Ask for help when we need it. And remember why we accepted the leadership role. Mm-hmm. Because it's probably still true. It's just that we're getting kind of tired. Mm-hmm. So this makes persistence, I think, a group activity and not just a leader activity. Mm-hmm. So when is it a group activity? When are we always going to have to be persistent together? Hassan says always. Good answer. Always, yes. You always need to go forward, and persistence is always a group activity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kirsten is talking about a reality check. Yeah, we need to do that occasionally. That's the focus on what is important, right? And how we're going to get there. I like theory. I like discussion. Because that's how you're going to focus and get to reality. But you got to remember that the step is reality, right? Yeah. And not get so wound around in your idea that it doesn't become a reality. It doesn't have a practical focus, too. Mm-hmm. So that's group persistence. Meryl says when we need consensus is when you have group persistence. True. Yeah. We need to find out what it is we all want and what it looks like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, James and others are talking about when we need to decide on a realistic next step. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes this is true. The group needs also to acknowledge that the goals and issues may have changed. As we've gotten into it, as we've moved forward, as time has progressed, sometimes the goals and issues change. And we need to understand that as a group. And we need to go with it. We need able to accept it and to work forward and not get stymied. Does that make sense? Not get kind of bogged down in, oh, this is how it was supposed to be and now it's not. What should we do? Well, supposed to be is a good idea, but realistic is a good idea too, right? Yeah. So the goals and issues may have kind of changed. Mm-hmm. Brenda and others are talking about outside change. The law may have changed. You may have had to take a different path, like doing state law instead of federal law. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the actual problem, the main one, which is a wonderful thing, has been resolved, right? Other groups have worked on it. We've made new alliances, yeah? Maybe somebody else has solved it. They've figured it out. This is a good thing. But it means that we need to decide as a group what we're going to do next. Are we going to, well, we might dissolve, I suppose. What we wanted has been, has become, or has become at the moment different, and we need to understand what the modification is. Something has changed. From the outside, different organization has helped. Laws have changed. We need to think about media, of course, social media as well as traditional, right, for the goals and issues. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are talking about economics. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that is a deciding factor about how far we're going to go at this moment because, well, economics has intervened, so to speak. Yeah, we might have to regroup and get some fundraising done or join with another organization that is better funded. Yeah, there's no sin in that. In fact, it's often very successful because it has to do with persistence and has to do with strength in numbers. Yes. And yes, we have about 4 minutes left, and I'm going to try to get to one of the recipes. I am. We keep repeating these recipes because we have these wonderful discussions, and then we run out of time. But let's try to get to one because I know you guys would like me to. So I've tried to leave time. Recipe for Peace now uses food as a tool. You guys have heard this, but there's a lot of new people too. And when we need a time out, when things might be getting a little uncivil, for example, or we're just tired, or we're hungry, we like to have food in the room. It's pleasant. It's convivial. Everybody likes it. And it keeps us all together as a group. If you're going to have food, yes, I'm going to say the thing that I always say, but it's so important. You need to take a survey of your participants and see if somebody has an allergic reaction, some sort of food, doesn't eat it, a religious prohibition. For some reason, some sort of food is not something that someone can eat, right? You need to give these results to everybody so that nobody feels that they are being left out in any way or not being accommodated. Yeah, very important. So we need to make sure that everybody can eat everything. And I think that we should all have a safe recipe, which means that it has ingredients that everyone would be familiar with, and nobody has a prohibition. And you might even have to, after taking the survey, have an adventure recipe. An adventure recipe has foods that oftentimes have a prohibition, but nobody in this group seems to mind, which is good because it makes for lovely food, right? A nice treat. Also, when you have people bring food, you need to have them say what is in it. List the ingredients, not just what it's called, so that if somebody run their eye down the list of ingredients and see if they can eat it. We don't want anybody to have a bad time, right? Right. It's a party. Yes. You know what? We're going to do the adventure recipe first for the simple expediency that it is shorter and we haven't got very much time left. Yeah. And this is an adventure recipe because of two things. It has pork. A lot of people don't eat pork. A lot of religious prohibitions. And it has wine. Don't even argue with me about the fact that the alcohol burns off. Some people don't like to have wine or alcohol of any sort in any of their food. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is a pork and white wine stew. Yes, it's white wine. Isn't that interesting? It adds an extra touch. A listener actually, thank you, Annika, a listener sent it in, and we made it, and it's just yummy. So we're going to have 2/3 of a cup of all-purpose flour because we need to coat the pork. Let's have 4 pounds of pork tenderloin cut into slices, nice little thin slices, like, well, 1/4 inch, whatever you can make, not thick chunks, right? And let's have 1/4 cup of oil. Mm-hmm. A couple of onions, nice sweet onions that we're going to thinly slice. 3 garlic cloves, finely chop them. If you think I use too much garlic, which people seem to think, I don't think so, but use less. Let's have a big can of diced tomatoes, including the liquid, and 1½ cups of white wine. Mm-hmm. We're going to season the flour with a little salt and pepper, coat the pork in it, shake off the excess. We We've got that oil heated in a nice big saucepan. Yes, we're going to run out of time. We'll be fine. We're going to add the pork, cook it over medium heat, turn it up and back. It takes about 5 minutes. Browned all over. We're going to stick the pork on a plate. Take it aside. You know that lovely pan that's got the oil in it and like that, that we just cooked the pork in? Let's add the onions. Golden brown. A few minutes. Maybe 5 minutes. Add the garlic. A couple minutes. Add the tomatoes and the wine. Stir it all around. Cook it for another 5 minutes so it's nice and hot. Remember that pork, which is still kind of tough, let's face it. We're going to return it into this broth. Cover it over. Reduce the heat. Let's simmer it for about an hour until the meat gets nice and soft and yummy. Yum, yum, yum. Delicious. Served with rice or with pasta. Everybody likes it. You need to carefully label it that it's pork and it has wine. And we are out of time. In fact, we've actually gone over, but that's okay. That's our adventure recipe. Delicious. Smells wonderful in the room if you're going to simmer it in the room. Right? Yeah. You might even make it right there if you've got the facilities. It's not as good as a stir fry because you can't eat it right away. But you might want to prep it and bring it over and simmer it for the hour so that it smells really lovely in the room. Rice, pasta, yum, yum. So anyway, that is our adventure recipe. And we, my friends, are out of time. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. You want to find us the word recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All prior shows are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.